and welcome to Makeshift Stories, episode 153. First, thank you for listening in. Your support is what makes the podcast worth doing. Today's story is Ken Likely, Accidental Interdimensional Drifter, read by Mitchell Two. Now, open your imagination and take a journey into the improbable as you listen to episode 153, The Whole Caboodle Mart. Ken compared the nutritional facts on the side of the cereal box to the list of dietary requirements his doctor had given him. He had been told to lose 30 pounds. Per quarter cup, 45 grams of sugar, 75% daily salt, 65% saturated fat. He grumbled in disappointment. They were all his favorite food groups, and all on the restricted list. He shrugged, and figured he'd make it up later in the day, then poured himself about 2 cups of his favorite cereal into his breakfast bowl. To complete the meal, he drowned the golden flakes in whole milk and dumped in a couple of spoons of brown sugar. He didn't like the taste, but had read on the cover of one of those magazines you find at the grocery checkout that unrefined brown sugar was healthy, and he wanted to be healthy, so he added an extra spoonful. 107-year-old claims unrefined sugar is the key to longevity. He could still remember the headline, because he thought the picture of the centurion woman picking peas in her garden looked somehow photoshopped. As Ken shoveled the first spoonful into his mouth, he reached over to read the morning news on his tablet. He had carefully duct-taped over the company's logo on its back. Ken wasn't about to provide free advertising for the transnational that made the thing, especially after the insane price he had been forced to pay. But before he could enjoy the feeling of its slick, buffed aluminum surface between his fingers, his teeth crunched down painfully on something hard. He spit the cereal back into the bowl, fished around in his mouth until he found the spot and winced in pain. Ken didn't like the dentist, and was still woozy from the sedation as he stumbled up to his front door. He was in no shape to work, and what was the point of going in for half a day anyway? So he had called in sick.
Hey, man!
It was his neighbor Leaf, the ageless vegan hippie who lived next door since the day Ken and his parents, now passed on, had moved in. Occasionally, Ken wondered why Leaf always looked the same, but usually got bored, and chalked it up to the fuzzy beard and long hair, both probably dyed, hiding the man's wrinkles. Leaf claimed it was his vegan lifestyle. But today, Leaf's mysterious fountain of youth was not on Ken's mind at all. His face was still frozen, and he was on a mission to discover what he had bitten into.
How's it hanging?
Leaf tried again, almost yelling in one of Ken's ears. Ken jumped. He hadn't realized the annoying man had somehow snuck up behind him as he fumbled for his keys.
Mouth still frozen. Bit into something. Broke a crown.
Annoyed, Ken blubbered through the numb lips. The door lock finally gave up the fight and swung open. Ken beelined for the dining room table and jabbed his hand into his breakfast bowl. The soggy flakes and slimy, sticky milk clung to his skin, forming a semi-gelatinous coating of goop. Leaf picked up the cereal and examined it critically.
"Thought you were trying to lose weight," he noted.
Ken ignored him.
"Found it."
He pulled his hand triumphantly from the bowl, then ran to the sink, trailed by soggy cereal goop, and washed his hands.
"Look. How'd this get into my cereal?"
he demanded, holding up a small, round object. Leaf put the box down.
"Oh, yeah, man. Haven't seen one of those in a long time. It's a prize. They used to put them in all the cereal boxes. I haven't eaten the stuff in decades, you know. GMO ingredients and that kind of bad stuff. But you gotta read the package, man, before you pour."
Ken handed Leaf the prize and picked up the box, turning it around.
"There's nothing about a prize."
Leaf shrugged the way he always did when he was about to launch into a convoluted explanation that would just confuse the situation. Ken glared at him.
Okay, you obviously don't want to know, but you've got a wooden nickel here,
Leaf explained anyway.
Wooden what?
A wooden nickel. That's what they used to call these. This one is fake wood.
Leaf chuckled.
A fake wooden nickel. How about that? Look, they used to make these things when the economy crashed. You know, homemade money to replace the official stuff when it became worthless. Kind of ironic, isn't it? If we all agree this thing is worth 10 bucks, then it's worth 10 bucks. But what's 10 bucks worth? One of these? Only if we agree that's the case.
Leaf held the fake coin up to the light to examine it more closely.
Huh. It's got an infinity symbol on it. Value is so arbitrary, man. Tricky stuff.
It was the kind of circular Leaf logic that made Ken's head hurt. Added to that, the freezing was coming out of his jaw, so it was starting to throb, making Ken more cranky than usual.
Give it to me. I'm going back to the store to complain and demand they pay my dental bill.
Ken rudely went to yank the token out of Leaf's hand, but when their fingers touched, Ken felt electricity surge through his body. There was a visible spark, and the room glitched like a bad channel change.
Did you feel that?
Ken asked disconcertedly.
Feel what?
Leaf replied, nonplussed. But somehow looked different, more disheveled, older, shabbier, more Leaf-like, if that was even possible.
Here!
Leaf handed him a crumpled paper bag. Ken stared at it blankly.
It's organic veggies from my pyramid greenhouse. You said you wanted to get healthy, right? Then eat these instead of that processed mush.
Ken grabbed the bag and stuffed the cereal box in, then left.
Lock the door when you leave, he yelled over his shoulder.
Ken's favorite white dry-cleaned work shirt was sweat-stained by the time he finally arrived at the grocery store. Needless to say, he wasn't in a great mood. The rideshare driver had refused to accept his debit card and quit on the spot, claiming that invisible electrons had no place in the rational exchange of services and he no longer trusted things he couldn't see or touch. Undaunted, Ken shrugged the odd behavior off and attempted to try again, but discovered his phone's battery had also run out of those same elusive particles which had apparently pushed the driver over the edge. His mood suffered a further blow when an uncooperative drink machine had rejected his change when he stopped to take a break to get out of the sun. Apparently, he hadn't been the first to be shunned. There was a pile of change on the ground beneath the coin return which had been spit out and abandoned. Ken was tempted to fill his pockets, but the thought of weighing down his pants in this heat changed his mind. By the time he finally arrived at the whole Caboodle Mart to find its owner, Ira, sitting in front of the store on a bench, Ken was far from impressed. Ira was one of those people who didn't really have an age or identifiable place of origin. She was just Ira, not fashionably dressed, but not embarrassingly out of fashion either. So, like a chameleon, she could get lost in a crowd. Disregarding the prominently placed, "We're closed for good" sign in the window, Ken stubbornly tried the door, which, in sympathy with the drink machine and rideshare driver, refused to cooperate.
"We're closed," Ira pointed out. Then, with an edge of sarcasm, added, "For good. Unless words have lost their meaning too, which maybe they have. You know there is a sociological theory which claims language is intersubjective? Which means that you and I need to agree on what closed for good means. For good could mean for the benefit of all, but in the context of closed, and assuming we agree that closed is the opposite of open, and I know you have been in my store where the sign said open, then we would normally both understand what closed for good implies. Therefore, your current attempt to enter my store would tend to support my unfortunate conclusion. Intersubjectivity has broken down across the universe, and it's my fault. Sort of. This was not the type of thing Ken had even remotely expected to come from Ira's mouth. Yes, he had stopped at the checkout once or twice to debate the wisdom of buying lotto tickets. Ira tended to dissuade her customers from the purchase, claiming that even a good grasp of chaos theory would not slant the odds in your favor. Hot and exhausted, he slouched down beside Ira, clutching his now crumpled brown paper bag with the cereal box and Leaf's homegrown veggies. Ira poured him a glass of water from one of those orange plastic water coolers, which are frequently filled with something stronger than water when found on a picnic table on a hot summer day. Ken sniffed at the colorless liquid suspiciously, then gulped it down.
"So thirsty," Ira noted. "Why do you walk here? It's too hot today."
Ken wiped the sweat from his brow with a wad of old Kleenex.
"The rideshare driver I got quit, and then my phone died," he explained.
"Can't say I blame the driver. I probably have done the same."
"I wouldn't have," Ken countered defensively. "I'd have lived up to my commitment to provide ride services to the public. Besides, there was nothing wrong with my debit card. I saw him swipe to check it."
Ira shook her head slowly.
"So you haven't noticed yet, have you, Mr.?"
She paused, waiting for Ken to fill in his name.
"Ken. Ken Likely. That is L-E-Y, not L-Y."
"Well, Mr. Likely, with an extra and unnecessary E, it appears you haven't noticed the problem."
"What problem?"
"Intersubjectivity is gone, vacuumed up or totally consumed or something like that. So everything not physical no longer exists."
Ken stared at her blankly.
"You know the beliefs we all share, like a country or Twinkies will last forever?"
"They don't?"
"Twinkies have a shelf life of 45 days, Mr. Likely, but because everyone believes they'll outlive cockroaches, I've left some on the shelf for years past the best before. Never had a complaint."
Ken's stomach began to protest at the revelation. He'd bought a package last week.
"So my guess is that you haven't noticed yet,"
Ira continued, oblivious to Ken's gassy burp. Ken stared at the woman, then worked up his courage.
"I came to complain about my cereal."
"Oh, is that all? And the rideshare thing didn't bother you?"
"Yes, and there was a vending machine too."
"What happened?"
"It refused to accept my change. It just fell through, then shut down. There was also a pile of coins on the sidewalk it had spit out. Interesting that no one had taken them."
"Hmm. And what would you conclude from that, Ken?"
"That I'm having a bad day." Ken pointed to his mouth. "I broke a crown at breakfast. Say, why's the store closed? Can I still lodge a complaint? I mean, you're still here, right? And you are, or were, the owner. So you're responsible. You're Ira, and the store's called Ira's Whole Caboodle Mart."
Ira looked at Ken, assessing him critically, then took in a deep breath and blew the air out between her teeth.
"Well, I was waiting for someone to come by and return something. I'm not sure you're that person, but I have a gut feeling, and I'm going with it, and we'll take a chance here."
"My complaint?" Ken asked, getting a bit irritated.
"Oh, sure, but you've got to hear me out first."
"This will lead to my complaint, right?"
"Most likely."
"I trust that pun was unintentional," Ken groused.
Ira lifted a finger.
"How long have you been my customer, Mr. Likely?"
2 years, Ken said after a moment's hesitation.
"And before that, where did you get your groceries?"
"I don't see how this is relevant."
"Bear with me a bit."
"Okay, the supermarket in the mall. I started shopping here because I wanted to support local businesses. You know your prices are way too high, don't you?"
"Economies of scale and opportunism," Ira shrugged. You've got to go a lot further away to find a store with such a wide variety of products. But I didn't open this place to make money. Where I'm from, I have the equivalent of a doctorate degree in anthropology. You might consider my little store here a social exo-anthropological economic experiment. Plus, when I filed for my residency papers, I was offered a couple of amazing career choices. Vehicle operator, service industry technician, or micro-scale merchandising proprietor. Obviously, I chose the latter because of the greater opportunity to pursue my interests.
You're interested in retail?
No, exoanthropology.
Not wanting to appear uninformed, Ken didn't like admitting there were words he didn't understand. So he let exoanthropology slide by without a question. But he knew what exobiology meant and was uncomfortable with the prefix exo being applied to the field of anthropology. It suggested one would have to come from somewhere a heck of a lot further away than another country to set up an exoanthropological economic experiment in his neighborhood. Ira eyed him, waiting for him to ask.
Okay then, she said after an awkward silence. Let's move on. There's stuff everyone agrees on, like the sun will rise tomorrow, or the sky is blue, or the world is a ball. Never mind that last one. That example, weirdly, not everyone agrees. That's why I like this place. Anyway, there's physical things that simply and irrefutably exist. Then there is abstract stuff. Things which exist only because everyone else agrees they do. That's my focus.
Okay, but Ken tried to interrupt. About my complaint, I want to complain about the cereal you sold me. Ken was beginning to have questions about the storekeeper's sanity, which he politely kept to himself. Ira didn't seem to notice Ken's skepticism and continued on without losing a beat.
Cereal would be one of those things that just is, so you can't argue it doesn't exist, but you could argue about how much you paid for it.
Too much, Ken cut in. I can get it for half of what you're charging.
Half of what, Mr. Likely? Half of some virtual assignment of value that just recently ceased to exist? That's the point. We're getting to the root of the conundrum. Intersubjective agreements on the existence of intangible constructs like value, or power, or even nations.
Nations? I don't understand what you're getting at, and what's this got to do with my cereal? Ken demanded.
What is a nation, Mr. Likely? Suppose we agree there is a border right here.
Ira drew an imaginary line between them on the bench.
I'm in my country, and you are in yours. But do they exist any place other than in our minds? Do the ants under the bench understand that they're crossing an international boundary? Look, there's nothing physical which would indicate a change from one place to another. It only exists because we both agree it does. And now, I'm going to cross it.
She wriggled over to Ken's side of the bench, forcing him to wedge himself against the armrest to avoid the obviously crazy shopkeeper.
Did I really cross a line?
You have, Ken started to say, but before he could tell her what type of line she had crossed, Ira ranted on.
That's the kind of stuff I'm interested in, and that's why I opened my store. It's my lab.
You sound a lot like my neighbor, Ken noted, pulling his bag protectively against his chest. No offense, but neither of you make much sense. Undaunted, Ira persisted.
That rideshare you mentioned didn't accept your card, right?
Ken nodded.
I bet he thinks numbers in a virtual ledger are worthless. Why work for nothing, huh? And that's because money and everything which exists only as an agreement between people is gone. Call it what you want, but currently, I'm afraid, my friend Ken, can I call you Ken? Those agreements are broken, and it's my fault. I lost a very important device, and it's obviously been activated. It suppresses intersubjective agreement.
Ira buried her face in her hands.
I was using it to affect relationships at the micro scale, but someone has turned it on at its maximum setting.
pressure-sensitive controls, you know.
Look, I just came to complain about the cereal I bought here last week. Ken pulled the box from the bag and put it down on the bench between them. This was in it. I bit down on the thing and it broke one of my crowns.
Relief spilled across Ira's face.
Oh, thank the gods, you found it! I put it down someplace in the store while I was stocking the shelves. It likes to play hide and seek.
It was in the cereal. Ken was outraged.
Well, it has been getting more creative about where it hides.
You owe me $800 for a new crown.
Here's my bank card and PIN. Take it, I insist.
Ira pushed a green debit card wrapped in a piece of torn paper at Ken. He hesitated.
Go on, take it. After all, it's just meaningless numbers. But I need that token back. And I'll take whatever else is in that bag.
It's just veggies from my neighbor's garden.
Good, good, good. Something of real value. I believe you have just proven my point. Great. Now I can publish my results. Maybe I'll even get a reward for this. Interesting. I get the feeling you shouldn't be here. Good luck getting home to whatever dimension of the multiverse it's in.
I'm 5 blocks away. Ken protested, handing Ira his crumpled bag of veggies. Ira smiled knowingly.
Such optimism, Mr. Likely with an extra E. I like that. A pleasure doing business.
She eyed him critically.
You should really change your diet.
Ira grabbed the plastic coin out of Ken's hand. The air around the bench appeared to shimmer.
Hey, Ken, my man!
Someone yelled from across the street, distracting Ken. He turned to look. Leaf and Planet were standing near a lamppost. Planet was sniffing around the post with intent, and Leaf was waving to get his attention.
I thought you were hot to sue the store for your dental work. Did you just get tired or something and sit down on that bench? It's not that far, man. You really gotta exercise more.
I just told her.
Who you talking about, man?
Ken turned back and found he was sitting alone. He pulled himself up and went to push through the door to find Ira. Instead, he found a brick wall. The mini-mart was gone.
Ken Likely, Accidental Interdimensional Drifter, is a Makeshift Stories production. Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. To listen to other great APN podcasts, such as I Have Some Notes or Not There Yet, please head over to albertapodcastnetwork.com. ATB Financial is on a mission to transform banking by making it work for people. They do this through their customer obsession and by innovating at the forefront of robotics, AI, blockchain, and the future. Visit www.atbalphabeta.com to learn more. Makeshift Stories is released once a month between the 15th and the 20th. This month's story was written by Alan V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu.
The opening and closing theme, Magical Mystery by 8th Mode Music, is licensed through an Audio Jungle Music Mass Reproduction license.
If you'd like to connect with us, please send an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. You can help us out by writing a review on Stitcher Radio or Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite podcast services. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means that you are free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.